You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League West. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com, and today we'll go around the division with our correspondents. I'm joined by my buddy, Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. Alden, after three trades for, I guess you would, they're not blockbuster trades. You and I talked about it, for Victorino, for DeJesus, for Murphy. Are the Angels feel like they're in a good place now heading for the stretch run?
Richard, I think they really do. I think if you ask the fans, they're disappointed because the fans always kind of live and die by the big, sexy names.
Wanted a big name.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were wondering if they were going to get Yoan Cespedes. Andre Ethier was a guy who was thrown out there. Carlos Gonzalez is perpetually linked to the Angels for some reason, even though he's got a gigantic contract that they cannot sustain. But, I mean, my personal opinion, I think they did really well. This was, all along, a really tough buyer's market, especially for a team that needs offense. Offense is down throughout the game, and there were a lot of teams in it until the very end because of the extra wild card. And I think what the Angels finally decided was, rather than splurge on the one big sexy bat, why don't we just address this lineup situation with volume, with favorable matchups? The sense that I got from the team all along as they were struggling through April, May, and June to score runs was that they were kind of more than just one bat away, at least in the sense of what that one, what this market could give you in terms of that one bat. So what they ended up doing was they created platoon advantages at their two most vulnerable spots in the lineup. In left field now, I expect David DeJesus and Shane Victorino to platoon. And at designated hitter, I expect David Murphy and CJ Cron, their young right-handed power hitter, to platoon. And they did it by not parting ways with any of their premium starting pitching prospects. They gave up Eric Stamets, really plus defensive shortstop in Double-A, but who's not hitting. They gave up Josh Rutledge, who they got over the offseason to compete for second base. He spent the entire year in Triple-A and hasn't really hit either. And they gave up Eduardo Lopez, a guy that they signed out of the Dominican Republic. He's 20 years old, still pitching out of rookie ball. I'm not saying none of those guys are going to pan out, but for what they got back, I think they did really well. And I think an important thing about this, too, is David DeJesus and David Murphy both have club options for next year that are pretty reasonable. David Murphy's is $7 million. David DeJesus is $5 million. We've talked on this podcast before about all the holes that the Angels are going to have this offseason and how close they are to the luxury tax threshold, which has been their spending limit. They have the option of bringing both of those guys back. Who knows if they do it? They'll let these next 2 months play out. But they have an option of bringing those two guys back on reasonable deals, and now they have less holes in the offseason. I think they did really good, Richard, and I think they're still looking for a bullpen arm, too.
And as Mike Socia and Bill Stoneman look at their team right now, so is that the first worry? And I'll say this, if the seventh-inning relief arm is their biggest worry, they're in a pretty good spot. But, I mean, that's it, just looking for one more piece for the bullpen, something like that?
I think so. I know I talked to somebody today who said that, you know, maybe if, like, a second baseman falls into their lap, maybe they'll consider it.
Although Johnny Giovatella's played pretty well, right?
Johnny Giovatella's done well. I don't think they feel any urgency to fill second base. He's done everything that they could have ever hoped for when they got him. I mean, they got him from the Royals for a guy that they had just signed out of the Independent League. Yeah. So he's done pretty well. I don't know if he's going to continue to hit leadoff with David DeJesus here, but we'll see. I think they're going to look for another bullpen arm, and that's probably it. Maybe look for something similar to what they did last June when they got Jason Grilley from the Pirates. I mean, if you remember, this team really took off last year when they were able to have three set relievers down the stretch: Kevin Jepsen, Joe Smith, Houston Street. If they could find another Kevin Jepsen, and it may very well just be Kevin Jepsen again, the Rays would probably like to trade him. That would be ideal for them.
I've been blown away by how well the rotation has performed.
Yeah.
Without Jared Weaver for most of this run, or if all of it, and how well Hector Santiago and Andrew Haney have pitched. What is the key to getting, how did Mike Butcher, Socia, whoever, get those two kids straightened out?
Well, it's funny that you bring them both up, because they have something, they have something very tangible in common, and that's the fact that Haney and Santiago were able to establish themselves in a major league rotation because they were able to finally get consistent with their delivery.
And you know what? If we had this conversation a year ago, we'd probably be saying the same thing about Garrett Richards, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we've seen him emerge in the same way. And Matt Shoemaker. But
absolutely.
Anyway, go back to those.
And you got to give Mike Butcher a lot of credit, because he's got a lot of guys in that pitching staff that have really funky, herky-jerky deliveries. Santiago and Andrew Haney are two of them. Andrew Haney came over from the Marlins, and he was just not driving toward home plate. He was swaying side to side. He was just getting no momentum on his pitches going toward home plate. He couldn't locate his fastball to both sides of the plate. His slider wasn't very crisp. Now,
Probably a guy that knew how to throw but not pitch.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what? And the thing about him, too, was he was always a good control guy, but he doesn't have the explosive fastball. So he's got to be right with his mechanics. And it's funny because he came in from the Marlins, and he was trying to win a job. He was trying to win the fifth spot of the rotation. And Mike Butcher just took a step back, and he's like, all right, I'm not going to mess with him. He's trying to win a job here. Let me see what he can do, and I'm not going to do anything with his delivery or anything. He struggled mightily. Finally, by the end of spring, Butcher told him, look, okay, this is what we need to do with your delivery. We need to get you back in a direct line with home plate. They worked on it. He finally showed signs in the exhibition freeway series before the regular season. His numbers in AAA were spotty, but it's the PCL. Guys hitting the PCL. Line scores look awkward in the PCL, and he's come up, and he's been everything they could have hoped for. Fans were going nuts when they traded Howie Kendrick for Andrew Heaney. Andrew Heaney is making a Rookie of the Year case right now, which is pretty impressive. And with Hector, give Hector credit. He threw 20 or so bullpen sessions over the offseason, which nobody does, but his arm just never gets tired, just trying to figure out how he can get his delivery consistent. I mean, it started with long toss sessions where he wasn't throwing through his target, and he started keeping a little black book with notes on every single little thing that he did over the offseason, from keeping his heel on the rubber when his leg kick comes up to...
And he did this himself.
He did this himself, and keeping his front shoulder in line with the catcher's mitt. And, you know, he has this thing where the most important thing that he does with his delivery is stay in your lane. So before every start, he gets his glove and he draws a line from each side of the pitching rubber to home plate. And it's like his little lane to home plate. He built himself a narrow mound at his home in Arizona in the offseason that he would fall off of if he would tail off to one side or the other. He shaved the line in the middle of his head on Jackie Robinson Day when he started as a reminder to just stay in your lane. And, you know, he's made such strides with his delivery. He told me the other day that, you know, Hector had some good success when he came back up from AAA last year, 3.30 ERA last 3 months. But he said he did it with two pitches. He can only locate his fastball and changeup to both sides of the plate. He's a five-pitch guy now in terms of locating to both sides of the plate. Everybody always wondered if he would eventually be a reliever, but he's finally showing everybody that he could stick in a major league rotation all year.
So now we have Richards, and we have Shoemaker, and CJ, and these two kids, and Jared Weaver coming back. What does Mike do?
This is a tough one. Jared Weaver's going to make a rehab start for Inland Empire on Thursday. I would guess that it's his last one, which means he comes back early next week. My guess right now is that Matt Shoemaker is the one who bites the bullet and ends up going to the bullpen, and then they option one of the relievers back down to AAA.
Now, Matt has pitched well lately.
Much better.
But he has struggled some during the year.
He got off to a rough start.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's a little bit unfair to Matt because he finished second in American League Rookie of the Year voting last year, but he was a 28-year-old rookie. You know, he kind of took a lot of people by surprise. Maybe some people expected him to be an 18-game winner again.
Sure.
Maybe he put that kind of pressure on himself, but...
Adjust and readjust.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if that's him, but he's still a solid pitcher. He's done really well his last three or four starts in terms of locating the ball down in the zone. But you look at this rotation right now, Garrett Richards is your horse. Hector Santiago was an all-star. Andrew Heaney is making a case for the Rookie of the Year award, like I just said. Jared Weaver's not going anywhere. You know, you need a guy like Jared Weaver. No matter where his fastball is, in a pennant race, he's been there before.
Right.
You want that guy on the mound. And C.J. Wilson's another guy. Big contract, durable, innings eater, been there before. I think it has to be Matt Shoemaker at this point. Unfortunate for him, but the Angels have a lot of rotation depth.
Alan, do you think winning 98 games, how did it impact this team? Is there a certain confidence level that we have done it, even through the tough times early in the year? We know we can do it. Do you see a carryover from winning?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's not just from 98 wins. I think it's because you have a lot of guys in that clubhouse who have done a lot of winning. Albert Pujols won a couple of World Series championships. Jared Weaver and Eric Ibar were holdovers from really good Angels teams of the past. I mean, they just added Shane Victorino, who's won two World Series championships and been to three of them. David Murphy, who they just added, was in the World Series with the Rangers a couple of years ago. Chris Iannetta's been there. C.J. Wilson has been there. Houston Street knows what it takes to win down the stretch. They got a lot of veteran guys that are very competitive.
That's funny the way you say that, because I've heard managers and general managers count up the rings in their heads, the playoff appearances and all.
Yeah.
So you've got guys who've been on the biggest stage.
Yeah, and I think, and you know, a lot of people were wondering, and I did too, when they picked up a guy like Shane Victorino. You know, you have guys like Daniel Robertson and Colin Cowgill who were filling that right-handed fourth outfield role perfectly. The difference between them and Shane Victorino is that Shane Victorino knows what it's like to be playing in meaningful games in September and in October, and that is very valuable to a team like the Angels.
Yeah, and especially a manager who likes some certainty when he puts veteran guys out there.
Yeah.
So as you've seen both the Astros and the Angels a lot this year, who's better?
Oh man, that is so tough to
and,
say.
And it's that simple in that. I mean, I don't think see the other three teams making a run. Maybe they will, but it looks like it's going to be. They play 11 more times after. Well, 9 more times after this week. They match up pretty well, I guess.
I really think, Richard, and I would have never said this at the beginning of the year. I think it's going to go down to the wire with these guys. I think the Astros getting Keuchel and Kazmir at the top of the rotation, and they may add another starter. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that may push them over the edge. Their bullpen is so much more improved than. You know, guys like Carlos Correa and George Springer in their lineup is huge. I think the only thing that I could see hurting the Astros down the stretch is that, as you know, they have an offense that's kind of, you know, hit and miss. You know, a lot of home runs, a lot of strikeouts, and they're also going to be counting on a lot of young players that have still not hit their prime yet. That is the only thing that I see getting in the way of the Astros, but I really think they're going to be in the battle the entire year.
I was noticing Albert Pujols at the All-Star game. And he seems to have embraced being a senior part of a team. And I don't know if the word is leader, but being the veteran guy. When he wasn't, you know, for a long time, when I knew him, he first broke in. Does he embrace that role, you know, the bookend to Mike Trout's youth?
I think Albert has taken it upon himself to be a mentor to Mike Trout because he just knows how special he is, and he knows that he could offer him so much guidance. But Albert didn't become the best player of a generation by not having supreme confidence, even when maybe it's not warranted.
And you know what? Entering that home run derby showed me. Yeah. Albert's not afraid to go step out there in front of 50,000 people and say, okay, we'll see what I can do.
Yeah, I think Albert still thinks he's the best player in the world.
Yeah.
I really do. And he realizes that Mike Trout may be one of the greatest players ever. But he still sees himself that way. And the way his mind works is they gave me a 10-year, $240 million deal to be a premium player. And I don't think he has said it in his mind yet that, okay, I'm in the tail end of my career now. I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to be more of a mentor. Not that he wants the spotlight, but he still puts the pressure on himself to be the great, prolific hitter of St. Louis. And that's not realistic. That's not who he is anymore. Not to say he's not productive, but that's just the way his mind works. That's the kind of pressure that he puts on himself day in and day out. I don't think he has accepted a mentor role yet, but I do think he's gone out of his way to help Mike Trout. Something he hasn't really done for young players in the past, but he just sees how special Mike Trout is.
Good stuff as always. Thank you, Alan.
Sir. Appreciate it.
And I'm joined by Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com. Before we get to the ball club, Brian, you and I were just in Cooperstown, New York. And let me just ask you this. Until Sunday, until induction Sunday, you were there Thursday, you were there Friday, you were there Saturday. Did any Astros fans show up?
I saw a couple on the streets. It was amazing just how they filled the streets of Cooperstown. And it really blew me away on the parade on Saturday. And if people don't know, every Hall of Famer that's there rides in a truck down Main Street, and the street was lined with Astros fans on both sides. Astros flags. It was like a parade down Main Street in Houston almost. So many Astros fans. And Patty Biggio told me that she got emotional when she looked out and saw signs that she had seen for years in Houston, in the ballpark in Houston in Minute Maid, that were now on the streets of Cooperstown, and just how much it meant to everybody to come. And it was like this, like the fans went in the Hall of Fame with them. I mean, they were there all 20 years, and Astros fans had waited more than 50 years for this moment. But just a great showing by Astros fans, orange all over Minute Maid Park. They sold out of the gift shop of all the Biggio stuff, which was absolutely amazing.
Craig told me late in his career that he was so aggressive and so driven that he could look around and see all the 5 and 7, the Bagwell Biggio jerseys in the stands. And it was amazing to see this guy who was so, you know, full speed ahead his whole career, 100 miles an hour, to like look around and go, wow, I made an impact on people. And did those tears and Patty Biggio kind of spoke for the whole weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, and Craig, you could tell he enjoyed it. I mean, as you know, when we interviewed him, he was a cliche machine, but, you know, when the tape recorders are off, he kind of told us what he meant. But you could just tell he opened up more than he ever had, and he just let his emotions flow. He talked about things we hadn't heard him talk about, his relationship with his parents, how the Sunshine Kids started. I think it just all bubbled up in him, and it had to come out, and it was he just really loved every minute of it. And, you know, I think his speech was great, and I think he represented the Astros terrifically.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not that easy to get from Houston, Texas to Cooperstown, New York. And so a lot of people planned for a lot of days to get there, and I hope Craig understands that this is a big deal. This is a big deal for the Astros, and it was a big deal, obviously, for Craig. You were there. You and Mark Berman were the only ones there from the media on Monday when Craig looked at his plaques. What did you think as you saw Craig and the kids and Patty there seeing that plaque that, you know, by the greats of the game?
It just kind of, that was it. That was the culmination of the whole weekend. Your plaque is up there now. You're done. They're only a few feet away from the very first class in 1939, which is Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth and those people. So Biggio is just to the right of that, next to Frank Thomas of the class of recently. So, yeah, that was to see them in there and the family and take pictures. You could tell that was kind of the moment where it just sunk in. You're actually in the Hall of Fame now. There's the plaque. I'm here forever.
And when you consider how the team's doing, that the team has been sort of magical, so fun to watch, and these kids are so entertaining. It's almost like it was the right time to go in. So here we are. The Astros have made a trade for a pitcher. They've gotten Scott Kazmir. What's the state of the Astros in terms of what do you think Jeff Luna would like to do next?
Well, they want to add another pitcher, whether starter or reliever, a bat maybe as well, but there's just not as many bats out there now. So I think it's going to be a pitcher. I think they will make a deal for a pitcher. I know they've looked at several guys. We hear them linked to Hamels. I, from what I'm hearing, I think that's a long shot. You know, Tyson Ross, Andrew Kashner, San Diego, obviously they've kicked the tires on, and AJ has history with those guys, and they're younger than Hamels. So they might do nothing. They might stand pat, and I think if they stand pat after adding Kazmir, I think they're good enough to give the Angels a run down to the wire. But if they do add one more piece, maybe even a bullpen arm, you know, I think they become the favorites again.
Isn't it weird how the timetable changes? Like, I am sure, even though they wouldn't say it, that on opening day they would have been happy with a 500 season. You know, because that's a big step forward to go 19, improved by 19 games last year and then another 9 or 10 this year. But the timetable changes. And do you think they look at Seattle struggling, Oakland struggling, Texas not very good or mediocre, whatever the word is, and say, this is a window of opportunity for us?
Yeah, big time. I mean, the Astros and Angels have sort of separated from the pack a little bit now. And even in the wild card, the Astros have a comfortable lead in the wild card. So even if they can't run down the Angels or stay with them, they're still in good shot for the wild card. I mean, there's only 62 games left, not a lot of time left. So,
wow.
You know, if they add one more piece, I'd be really shocked if they didn't make the playoffs and finish it off at this point.
So Jed Lowrie was leading Major League shortstops in OPS when he got hurt. He's coming back now. Where is he going to play?
I think he'll play a little of everything. I think he'll start at third. I think we'll see him DH, maybe the occasional shortstop. Obviously, things have changed. The shortstop, mm-hmm. Correa's here, and he's done great. So I think we'll see Lowrie play some third base. Luis Valbuena maybe get at bats at first. And, you know, what happens at first? You got Carter and Singleton. Do one of them go? You know, I think they have to be running out of patience maybe with both those guys. And
right.
Even though Valbuena's not going to hit 250, I think he's still giving you better at bats than you got out of those two guys. But I think they have to have Lowrie in the lineup somewhere just because he's so different than everybody else. High on base guy, high contact guy, does have some power as well. They need a guy like that in the lineup.
It's funny, when Correa came up and did well, we're thinking, well, that's it for Jed Lowrie. And now, when Jed's really ready to come back, he could be as more valuable than ever in that there's not the strikeouts, there's a function for him. Let me ask you this. Am I right that Preston Tucker played first base at the University of Florida?
Right.
Are they thinking, look, we're just going to let this kid get comfortable. We're not going to screw around with the positions. He's an outfielder right now.
Yeah, they want to keep him an outfielder.
Keep it simple.
AJ said emphatically, he's an outfielder. He's not an infielder. So, you know, they think they have options at first base. AJ Reed is leading the minor leagues in home runs at AA. I mean, does he get in the mix at some point?
You mean this season?
This season, maybe. Who knows? I mean, they've shown they're not afraid to promote guys from AA. And, you know, maybe AJ Reed gets a look at first base, the big slugging first baseman they took from Kentucky last year. But I know a lot of people were clamoring and say, let's put Tucker at first, but they're committed to him in the outfield.
So Scott Kazmir comes and Vincent Velasquez goes to the bullpen. Is that permanent or is that just a short-term thing to limit his innings, or do you play it by how the rotation's doing? What do you think they're thinking there?
I think it's a short-term thing. I mean, I think you try to ride Velasquez as a starter as long as you can. he's pushing innings that he's never pitched before.
Got to be careful.
He's right. Injury prone. We've all seen he's had a number of injuries. So if you put him in the bullpen the rest of the season, not a bad deal. Power arm out of the bullpen, which they really don't have. I mean, he can fire it up 97, 98 out of the bullpen. So that he becomes a weapon they can use as well. But I still think if he pitches in relief the rest of the year, he'll go into the next year still as a starter, because the arm that good, I think you got to explore that as long as you can.
And as far as center field goes, is Mariznick, who is the center fielder now? Is Mariznick the center fielder just because his defense is better than the others, right?
Yeah, he's the best defensive center fielder they have, and that's why he's here. I mean, he's doing okay offensively. He's not killing you. He can hit some home runs. We've seen him run, and he can change games when he runs a little bit, like he did last week when he scored from second on a pitch that got in the dirt. So even Springer, how great he was in center field, Mariznick is better, can make more plays. So they're committed to Mariznick in center. And he's hit well enough, I think you run him out there and see what he does. But he's made enough plays, saved enough runs, ran down enough balls in the gaps that you keep him in center field.
So we've been reading stories here that TV ratings have been good. The last weekend series, I think every crowd was over 30,000. Are you sensing that people in the community are starting to buy into this club?
Yeah, definitely. Not only that, more people just are talking about the Astros, whether on talk radio or if you're around town or you see people wearing Astros jerseys now that didn't wear them before. But, yeah, now that we're almost to August, I think people are like, okay, they're in this. They're for real. I'm going to come to the games, and I want to be part of it. So I know football's starting up, and that's always tricky when you're in Texas. But, you know, I think as we get into August, the crowd should swell, and September should be a lot of fun.
And as we know, if you come see this club, you'll want to see them again, because it's unbelievably entertaining to watch these kids play, even more so when Springer comes back. Do you think there's a date on when they realistically think George Springer can play again?
Yeah, they never set dates. I think probably we're looking at September 1st, maybe when rosters expand.
They'd be happy with that.
Yeah, they'd be happy. Again, it'd be like getting an all-star caliber player for the 100%. Last month of the season, 100%. He's healthy. He's going to come in. He's refreshed. He can play nine innings every day, and that'll give him a huge boost in the final month of the season.
And one of the things the Astros have always said about him is he's a difference maker in the dugout, the clubhouse. It's just because of his outgoing personality, because he loves to play. Never meets a stranger, gives grief to everybody, the coaches, the manager. It's amazing to see a kid that age take on, and I know Correa is going to be the leader at some point, but the Correa-Springer thing, what they bring, is pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, Correa just has this presence and just commands just respect, and just even though he's 20 years old, you can just see that he's different than everybody else. And I think Springer just doesn't know any better. He just wants to have fun. So when he's injured, he's in the middle of everything, and he's still jumping around. He's still leading the celebrations in the dugout. When they hit a home run, he's still the most vocal guy in the clubhouse and on the field. And I just think he wants to be a part of it that much, and it kills him that much not to be able to play, that he does everything he can to be a part of it. And even without him now for a month, he's still a huge part of this team.
It reminds me a couple of years ago when Scott Rolen was hurt. The Reds wanted him so badly that they had him travel with the club, and I guess George, you know, he thinks those of us on the outside of the clubhouse have trouble understanding, but it's pretty cool to watch the impact of a guy, just his personality, his presence, and I guess George brings that.
Yeah, he does, and I think he wants to be a part of it and feel locked in. He doesn't want to go away for 6 weeks and come back and say, okay, I'm here, I'm healthy. You know, what happened? He wants to be a part. He wants to be a part of the.
What did I miss?
Yeah, he wants to be a part of the fiber of this team, and he is.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Joined by my old pal, T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers with such distinction, easy for me to say. T.R., as you know, I went through all the numbers in preparing for this, and it seems like it would be one of those seasons that would drive a general manager crazy, in that there have been stretches when the pitching's been good, there's been stretches when the hitting's been good. But at the end of the day, do you look at it like there were just too many injuries to the pitching staff to give this team a chance to contend? What is your assessment as we head to the trade deadline?
I think they've done everything well, and I think they've done everything bad. I think they've just been, you know, they've had good starting pitching at times and bad starting pitching at times. Their offense has been hot and cold. You know, their defense has been north and south, whatever cliche you want. I mean, they just don't have extended stretches where they do it all really well at one time. Well, they did in May. They were playing really well, but There's just too many stretches where one thing will go wrong and that'll just, you know, cost them a game. Monday night, you played the Yankees, and they had the bases loaded, went out, and they don't score, and they end up losing. I mean, they've got a good team, but they don't have a consistent team.
But, T.R., as you look at the everyday lineup, how good is it in your mind? I mean, I see this kid Odor play. I mean, he looks like a spark plug type of player. But as we head toward the stretch, if John Daniels could, let's put set pitching aside, would there be anything he'd want to do to the everyday lineup?
Well, he's talked about a right-handed bat off the bench. You know, the problem with this lineup, it's a tremendous lineup if you go back to 2010. You put Shin-Soo Choo, Josh Hamilton, Adrian Beltre, and Prince Fielder in the same lineup in 2010, and this team would be a monster. It's 2015. Beltre is playing with a banged-up thumb. You know, Choo's been inconsistent. Josh Hamilton just isn't going to be 100% this year after missing spring training in so much time. You know, Fielder's done a great job, but this offense, you know, the big four in the middle of the lineup, you know, they're not performing the way they once did and the way the Rangers expected them to. And that's been a huge thing to the lineup. And there's no way to change that right now. I mean, you know, you talk about Odor and Elvis Andrus, they're playing well. Delino Shields has been terrific. They use more offense out of the catching, but so could every team outside San Francisco and about three others, Toronto maybe. But what the big thing is, the big four guys, they're four headliners. They're Mount Rushmore of offense. This is, except for Prince Fielder, and even him, this is not what they used to be.
T.R., how does the Cole Hamels acquisition, if the Rangers were to get Cole Hamels, how would that make sense to you? Because he's under control, and would you think, just from where you sit, that's a good idea?
Well, you know, it depends on who they have to give up. If they have to give up some serious prospects, then all you're doing is trying to shortcut that doesn't work. You know, if they can get him without giving away the cream of their farm system, it makes sense because, you know, now you got a guy at the top of the rotation for three more years. You know, hopefully at some point, Derek Holland, Martin Perez, you know, Nick Martinez, maybe Colby Lewis comes back. You know, maybe Yu Darvish comes back. Who knows? At least that gives you one guy. But, you know, if you start giving away, you know, your top pitching prospects, your top offensive prospects, and then you sit there, you know, you grow old with Beltre, you grow old with Chu, you grow old with Hamilton, you grow old with Fielder, you know, you're going to end up like the Phillies. You're going to have a lot of old guys who aren't producing and playing behind Cole Hamels. You'll be in the same spot the Phillies are.
I think, you know, Colby Lewis has been kind of a miracle recovery. And Matt Harrison has pitched well, even though, you know, scouts say he's maybe a little short on stuff. Do you think going into next year that Matt has done enough that the Rangers would have some confidence that he can resurrect his career for a full season?
Not yet. He's got a lot of work to do. I mean, Matt's done a tremendous job. It's a great story, but he's not there yet. And the thing is, people have to understand is he could get there in time. I mean, it's not like this is the final product. You know, the more he pitches, the more he works on his stuff, the more he works on his arm strength, you know, he could, there's a lot more room for improvement. The thing you got to look now is, number one, you can't look at this as the finished product. And number two, it's going to be tough if he struggles at the major league level, how do you get him to the finished product? That's going to be the tricky question for them.
In terms of Nick Martinez, has the league caught up to him? Does he need to make adjustments? Do you think he's going through what every young pitcher probably goes through?
Well, you know, this is what the Rangers are looking at. Is they're looking at, you know, guys like Nick Martinez, Colby Lewis. Right now, they're back-of-the-rotation guys, and you need a back-of-the-rotation. They like the three guys up front. That's why they like Cole Hamels. That's why they're hoping to get Yu Darvish and Derek Holland back. And they think Martin Perez might end up being that kind of a pitcher, too. And Nick's a very solid right-handed pitcher. He might be better in the bullpen. You know, he can pitch at this level. I don't know if he's going to dominate at this level, but he can pitch at this level.
Has Josh Hamilton been, do you think, better than the Rangers thought he would be, about what they thought he would be? How do they feel about Josh at this point?
I don't know if he's been as good as they thought he could be. He's definitely not as good as he once was. Again, the whole spring training thing, missing the first month of the season, still dealing with still dealing with the hamstring issues. You know, those are some big hurdles he's trying to overcome, and, you know, lack of playing time, and that's hurt him. And I, you know, I believe it's not going to be until next spring training when he has a chance to be at his best.
Yeah. Overall, what is your assessment of Jeff Banister?
I think he's doing a good job with what's given to him. He's a good leader. He knows his baseball. I think he's a positive influence in the clubhouse. You know, he's held his patience at times. I think he's been very direct at times. You know, I think he's done the best he can with the cards that he's been dealt with.
Yep. All right, T.I. A lot of luck can happen between now and Friday. Good talking to you. We'll visit again. Greg, I went through number after number in preparing for this podcast. What I saw was a team that has had stretches where it hit pretty well, had stretches where it pitched pretty well, but it has never been able to consistently put anything together. I would think for a general manager, for a manager, this is the kind of season that could drive you mad because you don't know. I mean, what you think you have, some days it looks like you do, and then other days, you go, what the heck were we thinking? How do you think Dax Serengic and Lloyd McClendon are handling all this?
Well, I think not only them, but the fan base as well. I think everyone's feeling a little frustration because you do see, and you did see what you thought was a pretty good nucleus and really a pretty good idea going forward, and it really just hasn't taken off, hasn't gotten any traction. They just haven't put together a good stretch of baseball, really, and the longest win streak all year is 4 games, and had a hard time even winning 2 in a row here for the last month, and just, you know, it's kind of one step forward, one or two back, and they just can't get any traction, and it is frustrating because you do see the pieces, and you see a pretty good starting rotation, but the bullpen's not performing very well, and this is a bullpen that was the best in baseball last year, and that's really been a problem here in the last month or so. Yeah, the offense wasn't there early. Now the offense is clicking, but you know, they still haven't been able to put all three phases together. And again, that bullpen is kind of costing them. You know, early on the rotation was a little shaky with you know, Walker and Iwakuma struggled out of the chute, and Iwakuma got hurt and Paxton got hurt. But you know, they seem to have put things together pretty well there with Mike Montgomery coming in and Taiwan really squaring away, and now Iwakuma's healthy and pitching pretty well. So you kind of see what you think you want to see, but it still just hasn't taken off on the field, and you know, it just needed that 8-10 game stretch to just, you know, go 8-2 or 9-1 and get themselves back in, and it hasn't happened. You know, whether it's still going to happen or whether they still even have time to make a difference, I guess is remains to be seen.
Yeah, and you know, for all the people that want to rip Jack Serengic's butt, I would say this: on opening day, we all thought this was a hell of a baseball team, and so, like, you know, I mean, there were certain things that didn't happen. And it's a reminder that in sports, sometimes you can make all the right decisions and it doesn't turn out the way you hope. But let me go back to Cano. I know he's a little bit better. Do you understand, does he understand why his numbers don't look as good this year?
No. Simple answer, no. I mean, I everybody's tried to put their finger on it, and he just got off to a bad start, and you know, there's been talk that his stomach wasn't quite right. He's had some issues, but you know, those are things that really, you know, if you talked to him about it, were bothering him last year probably more than this year. And you know, nobody wants to sit here and try to make excuses. And you know, he's a professional, proud guy, and I don't think he wants to say this was wrong, this is right. I will say, 2 homers in his first 67 games. He's got 9 in his last 30. So we're certainly starting to see the Cano was expected, and it's not just the power numbers. He's been hitting well. You know, you know, he was hitting .237 about a month ago. He's up to about .265. I mean, he's on a stretch where he is the Cano that you would expect. And as McClendon has said all year, when it's all said and done, his numbers are going to be close to what you expected. And that may be true, but that first couple months really cost him. And they just, you know, when they really needed to get going and had Cruz hitting well, they didn't have Cano with him. And you see what happens when they're both going well. That's really what this team is founded on, Seager as well. And you get those three together, and that's really what they expected. And Cano is hitting well now. You know, who knows why? I mean, it's a funny game, and you've watched it, Richard, for a long time, and sometimes even the stars don't have the best of the times, and Cano has been amazingly consistent over his career, and this is one of the few times that he just had a two-month stretch that just was kind of a plunker, and, you know, I think there's a lot of encouragement now to see him come out of that, certainly, and, you know, a better feeling with him going forward.
Hey, Greg, I would think today, as we talk today, that the Mariners feel pretty good about their rotation going forward. And the work that has to be done is with the bullpen and the lineup. Am I right that with Walker, with Felix, with Montgomery, that they are starting to see a pretty solid rotation and a place to build from?
Sure, and there are some question marks there. I mean, Iwakuma is a free agent to be. I suppose there's a possibility he could be dealt here at the deadline if they want to make a move. That would probably be one trade ship they have. So. But Iwakuma is a guy that seems very happy in Seattle, and I think even if they dealt him, would be, you know, candidate to come back. So that's a possibility, I suppose. But yeah, Jay Happ's another free agent at the end of the year. So you know they certainly have some openings there, but they also have Reynis Elias down in AAA that they really like. And so yeah, I mean they have that core. I mean you start with Felix, and that's going to get you a long way. And Walker certainly has been very good here since after a slow start, and Montgomery really been a nice, pleasant surprise for them. So got a pretty good nucleus there. One thing about Seattle, I think we've learned, this is a team that can go get pitching in the offseason. They have a hard time adding offense, and they have to overspend sometimes. But pitchers like to pitch in Seattle, and you can get a guy, Chris Young last year, you know, came in and did a marvelous job. I mean, guys see this as a pretty good park to pitch in. You can usually go get a guy and kind of fill out that rotation. So you get those top three, four spots solid. I don't see any big, you know, fear of adding a fifth, sixth guy, you know, over the offseason to make that a pretty good group.
So offensively is the priority, and I'm just shooting in the dark here, is the priority a leadoff hitter, a catcher? I mean, it looks like the shortstops have played pretty well. Tell me, what do you think they would want to do lineup-wise?
Yeah, that leadoff spot has been a problem. I mean, Austin Jackson, they went and got last trade deadline. He hasn't hit quite as well as they expected. No sugarcoating it. You know, he's been okay this year. Not as good as they hoped, and he's a free agent at the end of this year, and that's a spot in center field that it's interesting. They moved one of the top prospects, Ketel Marte, who's a young 20-year-old, was on in the futures game, a shortstop, and they've moved him to center field down in Tacoma here in the last week. Switch hitter, guy that can hit for pretty good average, and he's playing a little center field now, so that might be a little glimpse of where they're thinking down the future. So a young kid that they're looking at, but yeah, I could see him going out and getting a center field type leadoff guy, or you know, you mentioned catcher. I think they're pretty happy with Zunino behind the plate, and certainly happy with his last week or so at the plate hitting. They need him to be more consistent offensively, but I really think he's a cornerstone of the future going forward. A lot of people wonder about the average, but I think he's a better hitter than he's shown, and he's been starting to show that. He's been working with Edgar Martinez and seems to be one of the guys that's really benefited from that. We're starting to see more of what you'd hope to see from Zunino here in the last week to 10 days. First base, a question mark. I think Logan Morrison hasn't had a real good year. You know, they need to get more out of first base. You know, those are probably places you can see him adding maybe a corner outfielder. So they got to restock that bullpen. Those are some things going forward I think you'll definitely see over the offseason.
And Greg, let me ask you just overall, do you think they look at themselves and say, okay, we're not that far away. We just have to take a deep breath. Like the Royals in 12 and 13, they were so disappointing. That we are moving in the right direction. Do you think they feel that way even in a season that's been disappointing?
Well, I think it's a great question. I think the Royals are a great comparison, potential comparison. You know, they chose not to blow it up. You know, there's a lot of people saying, hey, this didn't work, you know, blow this thing up. And, I don't know. That's a tough thing to do. I think if you look at the real nucleus of this team, then what you're looking at is Felix in his prime, Cano really in his prime with a long way to go on his contract. Cruz, they brought in for a 4-year deal and going into the second year of that next year. I mean, Seager, they just signed to an 8-year extension, and certainly in his prime and just, you know, really getting better. That's the core of this team, and that's a pretty darn good nucleus. I mean, that group, I don't think you just want to blow up. I think you want to add to that. You want to supplement that in the right way and get the rest of the production. So I don't think you can sit here and say this is not going to work. I think you can definitely say it isn't working right now. It didn't quite have all the pieces, and things didn't quite come together as we've talked about. That bullpen wasn't the status they thought, and a couple of the lineup guys, and Ackley hasn't produced like they'd hoped, and some other guys. But I don't think you blow it up. I think you fix. That's my thought anyway. You got to. You don't just give up on what that nucleus of what you got. You put a lot of money and investment and time into that, and I think you build on that.
Yeah, I agree with you, because when you blow it up, then you don't know. You're answering questions again that you already thought you'd answered. But anyway, those are questions for another day. And sure. I enjoyed talking to you, Greg, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you for everything.
All right, Richard, we'll talk to you soon.
I'm joined by my coworker, Jane Lee, who covers the Athletics for MLB.com. Jane, a couple of things about the trades that Billy made this week. I look at the payroll for next year and I see $24 million in commitments. That's mostly Butler and Crisp, as you know. But there are also 15 arbitration-eligible players. Does Billy have to do more in terms of cutting payroll, or do you think he's at a manageable area now, even with the 15 arbitration guys?
No, I think he's definitely at a manageable area when you look at, who he's parted with and what he's parted with in terms of salary. Even though they chipped in some money with the deals that involved Zobrist and Clippers, those guys, along with Chasmir this year, were pretty much the biggest pieces taking up their salary outside of Coco and even O'Flaherty is making a good amount this year relatively, but they did shed payroll. It has been a focus. I think it has to be when you look at the position they're in, and they decided they had to be realistic about their situation. And this is a team that when they do things like this, payroll does come into play. And, it might even be one of the reasons, you're not seeing Barry Zito. I think at this point, a lot of people thought he would be up by now. And if he does come up, he makes, he gets $1 million automatically along with, prorated of the major league minimum. And you're thinking, well, what's $1 million to a professional baseball team? But, saving money and, keeping that payroll intact is something that's important to them. And maybe they're going a little overboard with it and, in terms of that. But, I think it is something that, they don't take lightly and they don't anymore. But, looking toward next year and, more importantly, past next year and in years to come, I think they're kind of putting themselves in a position to where they are going to be rebuilding. It's something that they haven't done in a long time.
And Jane, Billy mentioned the Astros model, which is a complete teardown, and it's very painful. The attendance in Houston went from 3 million to 1 million. TV ratings went to zero. I mean, it was very painful long term, and the attendance hasn't bounced back. But when I look at the A's in 2016, and correct me if I've got any of the names wrong here, but I see Lowry, Bird, Vaught behind the plate, Reddick is still signed, Crisp is signed. And whatever you think of Sogard and Simeon and Ike Davis. But then that pitching rotation with Gray and Chavez and Graveman and Bassett and Pomerantz and Hahn and Parker possibly, Griffin possibly. I mean, I would look at that team and say, wow, those are good places to start. We can contend. How do you think Billy sees it?
Well, I think that's what he thought. I mean, that's what everyone thought at the beginning of the season. You looked at their roster and, although a lot of names didn't stand out, after Donaldson and Moss and Cespedes and Samardzija, guys like those left, they still had good pieces, particularly in the rotation. But, it seemed like everything went against their way this year. I mean, any little thing that could happen did. Injuries really affected them. And, all those great pieces, including Zobrist and Clifford and Kazmir, it really didn't matter in the end because everything that could go wrong did. And so, they do have good pieces, and maybe it is a good foundation, but they really need they really need to solidify their roster. They have the depth. They've always had the depth. They've always kept in mind how significant depth is, and it's really come in handy in a year like this where you are seeing a lot of injuries, but there's just so much uncertainty on their roster. You know, you look at guys like Graveman and Bassett, right. And you never know what you're going to get from them. They're not, experienced, proven guys, and I think that's what they're missing. Up and down their roster, there's just, there's not many veterans now beyond Butler, and Coco really hasn't been around much of the season because of his health issues. So I think right now that they do have good pieces. I mean, anyone would love to have a Sonny Gray right now. He's solidifying himself as one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, but he can only help them every fifth day, and Kazmir too could only help them every fifth day. So it's kind of just about forming some kind of consistency, throughout the roster, and right now they just don't have that.
And Jane, based on, what you said, what Billy said, so can you see Billy listening on, and I guess he does all the time anyway, but listening on Brett Lowry, listening on Crisp, if there's a market for him, obviously with the history, Reddick, Vaught, and maybe some of the pitchers, do you see him doing an even further tear down and really taking a step back to take a step forward to replenish the roster? Do you see that possibly happening over the next six, seven months, I guess it would be?
I don't think immediately. I think right now, they're taking a step back. They've parted with the guys that they knew were not returning next year. And I think that was kind of the first step in the process. And now they've got to really think about what they want to do and how they want to go about doing it. I mean, Billy's been so adamant in recent years that he doesn't buy into, rebuilding. He doesn't want to waste the season. He wants to contend every single year. And for him to, applaud the Astros and the way they've been doing things and, how they're reaping the benefits of all those, painful growing years was significant to me because he's really never come out and said something like that. He's been very consistent in saying, that he wants to contend every year. And so for him to throw that around, that, I'm sure that raised a lot of eyebrows everywhere because, the A's really, they have been, in recent years, that team that's always in there. So I don't know that they even know what the plan is for the next 6 or 7 months. I think they want to, let this season play out, see what they have at the end of it, and go from there. Even when he was asked this week, do you plan to contend next season? And he really didn't have an answer. So I think they're in a position that they haven't really been in before. This is kind of new to him. I mean, as long as he's been doing this and, as much experience and success that he's had, this is a different position, and I think they're going to take a long, hard look and more than just a few months and, trying to figure out what the right move is for them.
One of the players Billy was excited about when he acquired him last offseason was Marcus Semien. And I look at the numbers in terms of just the errors, and they look bad. As someone who sees him every day, what's your analysis of what you've seen out of the shortstop, Marcus Semien?
I think he's getting better. There are definitely, he didn't look fully comfortable at shortstop at the beginning of the season. And I really think in recent weeks, even though there's been an error there or here, that he has improved overall. He's always had good range, but now he's getting to balls a little better. His throwing looks more natural. So I think from a defensive standpoint, he's looking a lot better. He's had his ups and downs at the plate, mostly good. I think that's what really impressed everyone, even throughout, the times where things were going well for him defensively was, that really never affected him at the plate. And he was always putting together good at bats. So I think all around, he's kind of what they expected. He came in and they thought he would be maybe an average player in all aspects of the game. And I think you look at him and you have to kind of agree that, that's kind of where he's at right now. And I don't know if they would seriously entertain the thought of moving him to second base, but it might be better for him long term defensively. And it will be interesting to see how these next couple months go for him, because if he does struggle or the defense just kind of hits a standstill and there's not much further improvement, that is a position that they could look to upgrade. I think all around the league, shortstops are so hard to find. So for now, they're content with him and they're happy that he's improving, but I don't know that he is, the type of long-term answer there that they're looking for.
Well, it's always interesting around the A's, and thanks for your time today, and thanks for all your good work, and we'll see what the next few months brings in Billy World.
This has been MLB.com Extras, the American League West. Thanks for listening.